Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Poison Prevention Week, and Donna Lotzer, who's been coming on the show for a long time now, quite a few years, to talking with us about poisons and poison control. And when we think about poisons, it's not just, I got to remind you, it's not just the skull and crossbones bottle that you might find in your somewhere around the house. There's a lot of other things that can qualify as poisons, and that's something that, Donna, welcome, by the way. That's something you want to bring across to people.
Absolutely. In fact, for Poison Prevention Week, there's now special themes for each of the main 5 days to get people to think about different types of poisonings or situations for poisonings throughout that entire time.
And you may have a question. You know, you may have a story to tell, too. I've got a story, or at least one that I could tell, about something that happened to me. You may have a story about something that happened to you or one of your family members that would be instructive for all of us as we listen. So you got one of those stories, something that may have happened to you and or your family member, give us a call. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page, at the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. And, you know, here's an example from my experience. I was in Trinidad at the University of the West Indies for a year, and I got a cold. And so I went to the local drugstore, and I bought a cold remedy, which is a company, the same box, same company and everything as I would buy back here. And I took a couple of those tablets and I was like, whoa, I was sort of off in Never Never Land almost. And someone then told me that the pharmaceutical companies make the doses different, can make the doses different in other countries because they're not under the same rules that our country's under.
Well, and the ingredients may not have been the same either.
No.
So especially if they may not, the label may not be in English.
Yeah, in this case, it wasn't English.
It wasn't.
It looked just exactly like what I would buy here. Yeah.
There's a lot of drugs that in this country require a prescription, which in other countries you can purchase without a prescription. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're any safer.
Yeah. So that's one of mine. Dick in Bark River, Michigan has a question. Hi, Dick.
Hello, thank you. And I think this is probably the most common question consumers have about the warnings on CFLs, the compact fluorescent lamps,
yeah,
which still have trace amounts of mercury in some. And the warnings say, if you drop and break it, have it professionally cleaned up.
What you don't want to do is do something like take, say, a vacuum cleaner and run over it with a vacuum cleaner, because what that does is takes the little bits of mercury and basically turns it into an aerosol or a vapor.
Vapor, yes.
And so then you've distributed all over the house. If you can find actual globs of mercury and you can consolidate them by using maybe two pieces of cardboard or something, put it in a secure container and, you know, outside into the trash, there are also kits that sometimes you can get through health departments or other agencies,
yes,
that may have chemicals like sulfur or something. But you really don't want to leave that sitting around in your house, especially.
Yeah. Yes, it is the vapors. Most people do not know if that is the danger. Vapor.
Right.
Yeah. Good point, Dick. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Nancy in Madison, your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Well, this is the time of year for Easter lilies, I just about lost my cat. My daughter brought one over, and I was on the phone, and she got up on the table and chewed a little bit. And I just had a feeling she threw it up, but I had a feeling that it was, I should check. And we, $600 and some later, and almost losing her, I won't have another plant in my house that's alive.
Well,
so it's something that people should really be aware of.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, if a child ate that piece of Easter lily, it would be totally harmless.
Yeah.
Easter lilies and dracaenas and a couple other plants are specifically very toxic to kitty cats. And so any kind of lily, actually, whether it's an indoor lily, outdoor lily, if they're in that botanical family, they cause kidney damage in cats. And so the harmful effects, if you looked up, is Easter lily toxic? If it's a reference to humans, it's going to say no. So you've got to be really careful when looking up information to be sure that you're talking about a cat or a dog or what have you. There are three now animal-only poison centers. And if something like that were to happen, I would encourage you. There's one which is in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, and it's the Pet Poison Hotline.
Okay.
There's one that's in Urbana, Illinois, and it's linked through the National ASPCA website. And there's a third one that just opened up in Washington State, and it's affiliated with the Poison Center in Washington State. So if your kitty or any animal gets into something, I would suggest calling one of those numbers, and you should be able to look them up pretty easily online and get, they've all got toll-free numbers.
Judith will probably find one for
there
us. Yeah, she's
but
working
on it
right now.
But the one is the Pet Poison Hotline in Minneapolis.
And that's probably, for us, that's probably a good place to go.
Yep.
Right nearby. And so we'll get that number and we'll put it up on our Facebook page. And we'll I'll announce it too, but we'll also put it up on the Facebook page. Thanks, Nancy.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. You can join in too, by the way, if you have a question or comment or maybe a story to share. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@WPR.org, or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And, you know, just so you know that it's, there are a lot of educated, very educated people, very smart people out there who can be just as guilty of getting themselves in trouble as someone with no education.
Correct.
Doug Melvin.
Oh, yes.
Of the
Milwaukee Brewers.
Milwaukee Brewers and Major League Baseball is a perfect example of this.
Yeah, unfortunately for him, the Brewers are in Arizona for spring training, and his wife asked him to come into their condo and please remove a quote-unquote bug. So without looking, he just reached down to get rid of it, and it turned out to be a bark scorpion that stung him. So he did nothing. Being a man, he did nothing until the pain was so severe and he thought, maybe I better check this out. And so unfortunately, Arizona has a very, very good poison center practically in their backyard, but he didn't call the poison center. He went on the internet and Googled scorpion bite or sting. And once he read it, he realized maybe he should have somebody see him. And he apparently spent a number of hours in the emergency department before being released. So it's like the internet may not be your best first choice when you have a poisoning situation.
And in fact, you got to be careful. I mean, we talk about this all the time about what you'll find on the internet.
Right.
You need to go to places that are
reliable.
Government, perhaps government sponsored, right. Connected with hospitals.
Yes. In fact, internet sites, you know, sometimes you'll still find recommendations to treat people for poisonings with Ipecac syrup to make them vomit. And quite frankly, that's not been done or recommended by poison centers for a number of years. But it's still in some stuff when you look online. And my favorite quote with that one was attributed to Mark Twain, who said, "Be careful about reading health books. You may die of a misprint." And, you know, that, you know, I hate to say that's totally true, but it's possible.
Greg in Madison, thanks for calling. Hi.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about a dog I had that had very powerful jaws, and she popped open a golf ball. And there's this chemical inside of some golf balls that she ingested. And it separated her stomach from the intestinal tract. And I lost her after the several $100 of surgeries.
Oh.
And it's not in all golf balls. Because we were kids, we used to saw those open just to get the little ball inside.
Yeah.
So I called UW Poison Control, and they said they were aware of it, but they don't know what golf balls are in.
When would this have been?
About 20 years ago.
Okay.
19 years ago in February, I lost her.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. All I can think of is some sort of a potentially corrosive chemical, but why would you put that in a golf ball?
I suppose to make it bounce an extra 15 yards or something. I don't know why. But I'd just be aware of it. And I didn't intentionally let her play with a golf ball. The kids were putting in the basement. We just left one out, I guess. But it was a very, very painful way for her to die, too.
No, and painful for her and painful for you, for sure.
Yes, it was, yeah. I just kind of put the word out to people to be aware of it. Don't let them play with golf balls because you don't know which ones have it in and which ones don't.
That's a very good point. Thank you,
Thanks.
Greg.
You bet. Thank you.
Appreciate it. And frankly, there's even some on tennis balls. Now, some of the tennis balls that are made, depending on where they're made, have lead, some sort of lead in them, some of the ones from China.
Great. Kids' jewelry for years and years. I mean, you know, consumer agencies constantly are catching kids' jewelry that comes into this country that either has lead or, worse yet, it even has cadmium as part of the formulation of the jewelry. And so you see recall notices because you don't want kids putting that stuff in their mouth or accidentally swallowing it because it's got a toxic heavy metal content.
Excuse me. Sharon in Janesville. Let's see. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Yes, thank you very much. Yesterday, my 16-year-old granddaughter was burned with potassium chlorate on her hand, and she did just have third-degree burns.
Was this in school, in a lab or something?
Yes, it was in chemistry lab.
Yep.
And my question is, from what we could tell, if what we read on the net was correct, if she wouldn't have had that properly cleaned out, it could have gotten into her system and possibly killed her. Is that true? And would she ended up with most of the top of her hand burned and the third degree burns. And I'm wondering if any of that could have gotten into her system.
I'm most familiar with it as a topical chemical, again, as you noticed, capable of causing chemical burns.
Mm-hmm.
And the best thing to do, I'm sure what they did in the school lab was immediately just flushed it with large amounts of water.
Yeah,
even
didn't
before
flush very long.
Okay. Sometimes depending on the chemical, recommended times for flushing can go as far as 10 to even 20 minutes.
That's what they did at the emergency room. But,
right.
Yeah. And she might have to have reconstructive surgery. But I just was curious if you would have known if that could have gotten into her system and caused any
other damage.
Yeah, I don't know on that one.
Something else that would need to be researched. Right. And
did anybody call the Wisconsin Poison Center, do you know?
We'll have to check on that. We'll check on that right after this look at the news. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. There are lots of things out there that make our lives better when we use them properly, but those same items, like plants or medications, household products, can be dangerous when they're ingested, and every second counts when getting help for someone who is at risk for poisoning. Larry Mueller here. So glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network. It's Poison Awareness Week. Lucky to have Donna Lotzer with us. She's the Poison Education Coordinator for the UW Hospitals and Clinics. Do you know what might be in your medicine cabinet or cupboard that could put you at risk or some of your children or family members? Donna's happy to answer your questions when you call in at 800-642-1234. You can also post on my Facebook page, at The Larry Mueller Show. Click like while you're there. We'll send you regular updates on upcoming show topics. We'll be back with Donna Lotzer right after this look at the news. It's Poison Prevention Week. That's a good time to remind ourselves how to keep ourselves and those around us safe from accidental poisoning, especially for the little ones in our lives and maybe the elderly ones in our lives as well. You need to stay on top of what those risks might be and how to avoid them. Larry Mueller here. Always appreciate it when Donna Lotzer comes by to share what she knows. She's the senior clinical pharmacist at UW Hospitals and Clinics and is a poison education coordinator at their Poison Prevention and Education Center. And Donna, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
We're great to have you with us. We were talking with Sharon from Janesville, whose daughter had potassium chlorate burn. She was wondering if it's systemic. We don't know whether or not it was.
one thing she could do is to call the poison center and ask for some help that way, you know, advice, even though it's after the time period of the exposure. And the national toll-free number for anybody anywhere in the country to reach a poison center is 800-222-1222. Now, in Wisconsin, that will route you to the poison center, which is at Children's Hospital of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. But as I said, you can dial that number anywhere in the country, and it will route you to a local poison center.
So 800, okay. Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. My daughter, it was my granddaughter that got burned, and my daughter did call the poison control center. And, you know, that was right after it happened, and she didn't ask those questions. So we can just call and ask that question.
I would give them a call back.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Thanks, Sharon.
You bet. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. And again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 with your questions, or maybe you have an experience to share. I think that's well worth talking about, too, shedding some lights on what you might have done and what you didn't do that you wish you would have, maybe. Shevin in Madison, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to offer one bit of advice that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So wanted to put the word out there that there are lots of resources, blogs, and other publications available for replacing a lot of potentially toxic household cleaners with more natural solutions using baking soda, baking powder, vinegar, those kinds of substitutes. We're just right now in the process of removing some of those chemicals from our home. And I was wondering if there are any resources linked to the poison center that you guys work with to help people reduce or eliminate those kinds of substances from their homes.
I don't know if the Wisconsin Poison Center has such a list, but again, you could use that 800 number and just give them a call. So call 800-222-1222. Tell the person who answers the phone that this is not an emergency. You're looking for information, and then ask your question. One of the things I'd be a little careful about is occasionally I've gone to some of the online stuff looking for cleaning suggestions, and you have to be a little bit careful to read the directions because they may tell you to use chemical A or chemical B, but not A and B together. Mm-hmm. And if you mix things that ought not to be mixed, you may end up with unintended consequences from that too.
Yeah.
Right. That's kind of what we're facing right now. There's lots of advice out there. None of it, or little of it, seems to be really vetted by a chemist, per se. But
yeah,
we think there are better alternatives. And getting that stuff out of our homes means it's not soaking into the carpets. We're not breathing it in. It's not on our skin. All those things that we'd like to improve upon in the quality of our lives. So maybe that's the future direction or the future of poison control is prevention.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that's what, Donna, that's what you're all about.
Right. I do outreach and educational programs, but to be honest, I haven't seen anything that I can immediately recall that would help with your question.
Yeah, unfortunately. Well, let's check it out.
I'll have to look.
Yeah, well, that's something to check out. Shevin, call that 800-222-1222. See what they've got. They may be able to suggest something. Appreciate it. And Joan in Madison, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. Well, every summer we get ants, as a lot of people do, and we put down little raid ant traps in the corners of our floors.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pretty small, little kind of ant hotels, I guess. And we have a big Labrador retriever who's very curious, and little did we know that they put peanut oil in the ant traps, and dogs love peanut butter. And so our dog ate a couple of ant traps, almost not the whole thing, but a lot of it, enough to be worried. And this, of course, happened at like midnight. So we ended up calling the Animal Poison Control Center, and they were very helpful. They let us know that it's because of the peanut oil that dogs are drawn to it. And for a fee, you know, they give you, they gave us great advice, and we did not have to make a trip to the emergency vet. We followed their direction, and he's safe and sound.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad you brought that up, and it's also worth noting or reminding that there is a fee associated with calling the animal poison control center,
yeah,
no matter which one.
Right.
Right. I think it's like $62, but it was well worth the life of our dog, you know.
Yeah.
It was, they were just really, they walked us through it. They made themselves available. It was a really good experience. I mean, you know.
Well, yeah. And probably if you'd taken it into the vet, you would have spent probably more.
Right. And I don't think we would have been able to at that time. It would have been an emergency call. It probably would have taken a long time. And so this was really, it worked out. But that's just something to think about with the peanut oil, because dogs love peanut butter.
Yeah.
And also with the ant traps, you may have had as much of a problem with the plastic or the material from the trap as you would have with the chemical inside.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, Joan.
Thanks.
Yeah, appreciate the call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. I think the amount that you pay varies. The Minnesota one is, was that $39?
Yeah, it depends a little bit which of the poison centers, your animal poison centers you're calling. For a human poison center, you know, the calls are always free of charge.
Yeah, those are always
so
free.
So people don't have to worry there about being charged for a call.
And we did, Judith did put up the Poison Control Center for Pets in Minnesota. It's up on our Facebook page, so we've got that number there posted, and you can make use of it, that's for sure. We've got some tips for story. Medication is one thing that you really have to be careful of. I know when my mother was, you know, died of Alzheimer's, and there was a point where she was on a lot of medications, and you certainly did not want to have those medications around where she might take them.
Or somebody else coming in to visit might accidentally get into them.
Yeah.
It's always good with any kind of medicines in the house to have them either in a cupboard that's locked, in a box that you can lock, so that they are out of the reach and out of the sight of small children. The other thing is that, of course, some people worry more about their teenagers and strong pain medicines than they do about the two-year-old who might get into something else. So there's always a good reason to have your medicines out of sight, out of reach, and in something that you can lock, even if it makes it a little bit less convenient for the adult who's presumably the one taking the medicine.
And there's a high percentage of the poisonings that happen are right in our own home, isn't it?
Absolutely. In fact, over 50% of calls to poison centers are kids who are 6 and under, which is totally
accidental. So young, yeah.
Right. But 90% overall of exposures are happening in somebody's home, whether it's the person's own, a friend or relative, the babysitter. You go to visit somebody and you forget that in your purse or in your pocket or in your overnight bag, you may have medicine, you may have hand sanitizer, you may have cologne or an aftershave type of product. Kids especially are going to check out pretty much everything they can get into. And small kids can't read. They're totally curious. And they're just going to go for it.
Donna Lotzer, our guest today, as we talk with her about poisons and Poison Prevention Week. You may have a question, or maybe you've got an experience to share as it relates to you or maybe a family member or even a pet. We'd love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. And tell you what, we'd love to hear from you. And even if, you know, the drugs, even the stuff that you buy over the counter, I mean, that can be just as dangerous as prescription.
Absolutely. And some people don't realize that if the container has, for example, a child-resistant closure, they're never child-proof.
Yeah.
Because if you give the kid enough time, they will get into it. But they may not have put the cap back on tight. Or you may buy a bottle of, say, pain relievers that isn't a size that's exempted from child-resistant packaging because it's meant for adults with arthritis who can't otherwise open the containers. So that leaves people open to getting into things that they shouldn't, or that certainly wasn't intended for them. And kids can climb. They'll push a chair over to a countertop, climb on the countertop, and all of a sudden they can reach on top of the refrigerator or into an upper cupboard where you would never think that they would go.
Jackie in Milwaukee, your turn. Thanks for calling, Jackie.
Good morning. One of the things that I had never thought of was an article in the paper where a dog ingested pennies, money.
Oh.
And the zinc in he ate 100 and some pennies. Cost $600 for the surgery. But kids play with money, and I don't know if that would happen for them. But the other thing is antifreeze. If your car leaks antifreeze and you have an animal, they are so attracted to it that some people have been known to put it down on their garage if they have some kind of an invading animal.
Boy, yeah, because it'll kill them.
Yes, to both. Antifreeze is very sweet tasting, so a dog or a cat, you know, thinking domestic pets, is going to readily check into it. But also, like you said, I mean, if people leave that in a garage, if you have chipmunks or, you know, whatever happens to be getting in there, antifreeze kills in a very painful and sometimes, you know, really drawn-out fashion.
Oh,
it's not a fun thing to do, but if a pet gets into antifreeze, they need to be seen by an emergency vet service as soon as possible.
And what about pennies? Did you ever hear about that? I haven't. And yeah. Kids will play with money.
A lot of times with foreign objects, you worry about whether or not the person might choke on it, and it goes into the lungs. With kids, you've got coins to a certain extent, disc batteries or button batteries, the type that you would find in remotes, you know, control devices for everything. Those can break open in the stomach and cause extremely severe chemical burns that leads to extensive surgery or even death. So what you would do in a situation like that is the child would need to be medically seen. They would probably do an x-ray to localize on a coin, for example. Is it in the stomach or did it get hung up someplace else? And then they may decide to observe the child and make sure it passes. Or if there was 100 coins swallowed by a youngster, they might have to do some intervention to remove them forcibly. Yeah.
Yeah. Jackie, thank you. Appreciate it very much. I want to go to Jennifer and Dane next, who has a comment. Hi, Jen.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Great. Thank you for calling.
I just have a comment. I was under the listening to how you guys should lock things up with medical supplies.
Mm-hmm.
And my two-year-old, she just learned how to climb up on counters and got into the bathroom counter and ate half a tube of Scooby-Doo toothpaste.
Ah!
Of the things that you don't think of, toothpaste, for example, on a two-year-old.
Actually, believe it or not, diaper rash ointment.
Oh, wow.
When you think of, you know, products like that in a medicine cabinet, that's like the number one or number two thing that kids eat. Fortunately for the kids, it's harmless. But it's obviously something which is readily available. With the toothpaste, it's mostly soap or detergent. So a large amount might give her a bit of stomach upset. And I don't know if Scooby-Doo contains fluoride.
It does. And that was, found that calcium counteracts fluoride. So,
but you'd have to
eat. She was already drinking milk and everything else, so it was fine.
And that sounds perfect. You'd probably have to eat like a 4 to 6 ounce tube of toothpaste.
And that's what they said. I was very relieved once I heard that. I thought, oh, good.
Oh, man. Oh, you're in for a lot more experiences probably like that, Jen. Good luck.
I think so. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Oh, man. Reminds me of back in the day when I had a little youngster running around. Ryan in Menominee. Hi.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. I have actually a funny story. It was yesterday I had to call Poison Control. my son, he's 18 months old. And he has a new trick where he'll push his table or his chair up to the counter, and he'll climb up on the counter. Well, we keep all our cleaning supplies in a closet, so he can't get to them. And just for some reason, we had a container of the Clorox wipes, the counter wipes, on the counter, and it was empty. And he loves drinking from a cup, so he saw there was a little liquid in the bottom, and he decided he was going to drink it. Well, I turned around for 2 seconds, and I turned back around, and he's trying to drink out of it. he got a little in his mouth. I wasn't sure if he swallowed it, so I called Poison Control. And I really wish I would have gotten this woman's last name, but her name was Susan. And it was Wisconsin Poison Control, and she was just amazing. Like, she told us exactly what to do, what to watch for, and she called us back an hour later to make sure he was okay.
Oh, that's great.
Amazing. I hope she's listening so she can hear this, or I hope she's, I really wish I would have gotten her last name, but I had a really, really good experience with them. And luckily he was smart enough to spit it out after he realized it didn't taste very good. So he didn't swallow any of it, but it was just one of those situations that having to deal with the government agencies basically isn't very fun, but dealing with them, it was just terrific.
The people who answer the phones at poison centers are certified poison information specialists. They take hours and hours and hours of ongoing continuous training and answer large numbers of calls. Calling back is just part of the reason that poison centers are out there. It's to make sure that everybody is okay at a later point in time. If you might develop some problems, they're going to call back and catch it. And decide what to do. So I'm glad that you had a good experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks.
Yeah, appreciate that very, very much. Ron in Sparta, thank you for calling, yes, huh?
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'm an elderly semi-retired construction worker, worked in the trade for 40 years, and I found out that now my body is a lot more reactive to all kinds of compounds that I used to deal with on a normal basis when I was a lot younger. So you use extra protective measures, gloves, respirator, because there seem to be... also, I've survived leukemia chemotherapy, and I don't have any idea what kinds of medicines my body might be allergic to now. I was allergic to none before, but I found out I'm allergic to many now, so it's your body completely changes as you get older.
Yeah.
Wow. Sometimes people who work with exotic woods will end up with like a contact allergy, and then if they breathe in the wood, they can end up with a reaction related to, you know, asthma or other symptoms like that. But, you know, it's real hard to say what sort of chemicals could have been involved over the time period of your career.
Yeah, it could have been a lot. But you know, then you got to really work very carefully or closely with your physicians,
yep,
to know what you should be able to take and what not. Caller wanted to emphasize that keeping household products like Drano under the sink can be a huge poisoning and injury risk. You know, just
absolutely.
A lot of times that's where they wind up, right under the sink.
And that's why safety closures for cabinets are so important. There are some that people buy and kids figure it out in 2 minutes and they're into that particular cupboard. There are other ones. Totlox is one brand that's a magnetic closure that frustrates the adults who try to get into the cupboard. But I can guarantee that the youngsters are not going to be able to get in there. So a lot of places you can go and you can buy good closures with which to safety lock cabinets if you have to keep them someplace where they might potentially be accessible to kids.
Mm-hmm. And a caller and his mom are having a disagreement about whether poinsettias are poisonous or not. And I just, you
is
know,
there money
always
writing
used,
on it?
Yeah, they're probably. It used to be that everybody's poinsettias are very poisonous. And,
right.
But that's not the case, is it?
No. In fact, poinsettias, if you break a stem or maybe a leaf or that, you'll find a white milky sap inside.
Mm-hmm.
If you get that sap in the mouth or into your eyes, it will be a bit of an irritant. So you simply wash it off right away. As far as eating a leaf or something like that, sampling the plant, it will not harm a person. And so the plant would be safe overall to have in the house.
So that's one of those plants that... Has a bad rap.
Exactly.
And not a problem for kitties or dogs?
The only thing I could think of there, again, dogs usually are much more aggressive eating plants. So if you got into the stems and the part that had the white sap in it, it might cause mouth irritation or that, you know, to an animal as well. So I wouldn't encourage them to eat it, but I don't see any major problems that would happen.
We had an email from someone else, Jackie, I believe, who has a piece of advice regarding natural mosquito repellents, like Repel. Keep any clothing you have sprayed away from your pets. I was guilty of thinking a natural product would be safe, but my cat licked my shoes and had been sprayed, and she nearly died. Mm-hmm. So,
well, again, I'm certainly not an expert in animals, but there are chemicals, and I believe permethrin is one of them, that is used in some products mostly for ticks rather than mosquitoes. And again, the toxicity to a human may be very different than the toxicity to an animal. Certainly, permethrin is highly toxic to, say, birds and fish.
Yeah.
And I believe that it can cause more sensitivity to cats as opposed to a dog. There are products that are used with permethrin as putting on the dog, but they're very toxic to kitty cats.
Always a pleasure, Donna. Thank you so much. And again, that number is 800-222-1222. Donna Lotzer, Senior Chemical Pharmacist at UW Hospitals and Clinics, our guest. Thank you for listening.